Right, please help me welcome Helen. Thank you.
Really tall man up here. I'm Helen, a compulsive overeater. And welcome to the newcomer. And happy birthday, Zan, for 21 years. And thank you, Roy, for asking me to come and share. Let's see, I have pictures. I don't know what happened to my little album here. I don't know if it got wet or hot, but it kind of blew up. Yeah, so anyway, but so did I. So anyway, let's see. I'll qualify first. I've been abstaining from compulsive overeating for a little over 5 years, and I've been maintaining about 100-pound weight loss. Through the grace of God, completely and utterly, because, you know, I don't know how to live my life without cramming food down my throat. On my at work, on my computer, I get a daily, thought from another 12-step program that I go to. And one of the things came, and it said the thought for the day was, it's kind of fun to do the impossible. And I love that, and I cut it out and put it on my computer because it is impossible. You know, I thought, it is impossible for somebody like me, you know, who came from where I came from, where I couldn't live a day without shoving food down my throat, to, to be these last 5 years without eating compulsively. You know, that's just a miracle. And like I said, it is impossible. And, you know, and it is kind of fun, you know. It wasn't, for a long time it wasn't. It was, I have a cartoon in my little book there, one of those great New Yorker cartoons, and it's two fish, and one says, I can't remember exactly, but to tell you the truth, I'm not that comfortable in water, you know, and that's how I felt always, because it's true, for a long time I felt extremely uncomfortable, you know, and I'll say in this last year, there's been a big change where I don't feel uncomfortable all the time, you know what I mean? Uh-huh, yeah, that's what I knew something happened. Anyway, but it really, something happened, you know, but so anyway, I'm starting to feel more comfortable in my own skin, you know, so that's great, and that's just a gift of this program. But I guess I should start at the beginning, since I have 45 minutes, so you can hear all the long version with all the gory details in it. So anyway, let's see. So I've just always been a compulsive overeater from my earliest memory. I remember binging uncontrollably on sugar. You know, I couldn't get enough sugar. Just real young. I don't know if the youngest memory I have is 3 or 4 years old. And just being obsessed with the sugar, and I didn't want to eat real food. I just wanted to eat, you know, candy and cake and all that stuff. And so, and I can remember in kindergarten, you know, being obsessed with, because when I was in kindergarten, you know, you brought your nickel for milk. And then a different mom every day would bring the snack, you know. And just being obsessed with what that snack was going to be that day, you know. And anyway, so, and I remember the only thing I didn't like was coconut, and I hated those snowballs. And I remember a mom bringing those snowballs one day and being just devastated, you know, because I wasn't going to eat, you know, I wasn't going to get my fix that day, you know. So anyway, but so it's just, and I remember too as a child just binging on cookies, you know, as where I made myself sick, cookies, candy, anything I could get my hands on, and just becoming physically ill, you know, because I just couldn't stop eating. But and again, you know, it was always a battle because my parents wanted me to eat good food. My mother, you know, growing up in the 50s, my mother stayed home and made healthy meals, you know, and I didn't want any part of those meals, you know, I just wanted to eat the crap, you know, and so it was always a struggle, and I was very thin as a child, and I don't know why, Well, I think my parents were still able to control, you know, my intake pretty much. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't just be binging completely out of control because they had control over the food. So, but as often as I could get my hands on sugar, I would be just binging. So, anyway, and I had other weird things with my food, like I wouldn't eat food that touched, you know, just weird things like that. And my parents are Cuban, so we would eat, they'd make beans and rice, you know what I mean, things like that. And that was, you know, I mean, all the food touched, you know what I mean? And I wouldn't eat it. And I still remember one time we were going to my parents' friend's house for dinner, and the father was a doctor, and I was scared to death to go to the doctor and have shots. And I remember my mother saying, if you don't eat everything that they serve you, he's going to give you a big shot, you know? And I remember, so we went over there, and these people are Cuban, and we walk in, and what were we having? Beans, black beans? And I remember the whole night being having like a knot in my stomach because I'm thinking I'm going to get a shot because I'm not going to be able to eat that, you know. But anyway, it all worked out. We ate in the bedroom. The adults ate in the dining room, so my mother didn't even see that I didn't eat any of my dinner. So, it, like I said, it all worked out. But anyway, so, but there was just a lot of crazy insanity around the food from my earliest memory. Anyway, so by the time I was a teenager, you know, early adolescence and adolescence, it just, you know, because it is a progressive disease, and it just got worse and worse. And, I can remember, you know, I used to love to bake cakes. So every week I'd bake a cake, and I'd put, like, these cakes were, like, I would cram as much chocolate in a cake that you could possibly get. You know what I mean? And I eat the whole cake by myself, or my mother would go to the store and buy Oreo cookies, which I loved, and I'd eat the whole bag immediately. So, anyway, but, and like I said, as a teenager, too, I was very skinny and tall and skinny, and I think I was, you know, growing a lot. So, you know, that's why I didn't become obese at that time. I don't know. But I was, like, notorious among my friends for how much I ate, you know. And they'd say, God, you eat so much. How come you're so thin? And I remember, I can still remember the memory of thinking, of fear at that moment, because thinking that I was never going to be able to stop eating like that, and someday I was going to get fat. You know, it was like an instant thought in my head. And I knew I was going to, because I knew I was never going to not be able to eat like that. So anyway, but yeah, I just ate a lot. And then when I was 14, I started drinking. I'm also a sober alcoholic today. And so, but that's just kind of how I just dealt with my life, you know, eating and drinking. So, and I remember the girls in junior high school, you know, that were so comfortable in their own skin, junior high school and high school. And I remember these girls and looking at them and just thinking, how did they get that way? You know, and what's wrong with me? Because I just had such a gigantic hole in my gut, you know. And, of course, I didn't know I was supposed to fill it with God. I was trying to fill it with something, with anything, you know. And I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. I mean, I can remember just my skin crawling, you know, and just utterly and completely uncomfortable. And, like I said, and I'd look at these girls and why were they like that? And there was just something really wrong with me from beginning to end. You know, I knew it was wrong, you know, bad, wrong. I felt ugly, stupid, you know, all those things. So, anyway, but it was just actually a physical discomfort along with the emotional discomfort that I had. Anyway, so I was, like I said, just binging out of control, and it just was getting worse and worse. And I'll tell my pizza story because I haven't told it in a long time, right? So I get tired of telling it. But just I'd go on dates with my boyfriend, you know. Well, I didn't have that many. Okay, but my boyfriend and I were at the drive-in. I'll tell you this story. And so he goes to the snack bar, and he buys, you know, this big thing of food. You know, and I figure, I wonder if he's, I know he's got to be an AA or dead or something, but I'm thinking, I wonder if he was a compulsive overeater, because he ate like I did, I think. Now that I think that, well, maybe, you know, he couldn't because I got it before he could. You know what I mean? I guess maybe I was the one eating it all, and I just wanted to think he was eating as much as I was. Anyway, but he goes, brings back all this food, and then he says, I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom. So he leaves me, you know, with the pizza and all this crap, you know, candy, popcorn, you know, sodas, and then, you know, of course, we had beer in the back seat. So, you know, we were set. Anyway, so he goes, and I eat the whole pizza before he comes back from the bathroom. And I can remember thinking, oh, he's going to come back and want some pizza. You know what I mean? And he said, comes back, I still remember this, comes back and gets in the car and goes, where's the pizza? I still remember that. And I just said, I ate it. And he couldn't believe it. He goes, you what? You what? It wasn't one of those giant pizzas. You know, it was like a, I don't know if anybody here ever went to the drive-in, but it was like drive-in movie kind of size pizza. But anyway, but that's how I ate, you know, and I couldn't restrain myself even on a date. You know what I mean? With the boy that you would think, you know, I was never myself. Well, after a few drinks, but you know what I'm saying? It was like, so that's how I ate, like I said. And I couldn't stop it and I couldn't restrain it. That's just what I did, you know, trying to feel comfortable, or that it was just my response to life. You know, I was so in fear. Fear from my earliest memory, you know, just gripped me. I was gripped by fear. And so, like I said, the only way I knew how to get through the day was to eat and like that. So it just progressed and progressed, and by the time I was 19, I got married to an older man, and, you know, he was going to fix me, and he tried to fix me for a long time. You know, God bless him. He did. He tried, and, you know, I was 19 years old, and I was, you know, I was a compulsive overeater. I wasn't overweight. Like, I weighed, you know, less than I weigh now, but I thought, I felt fat and ugly, all this, you know. So anyway, so I was already a compulsive overeater, though, an alcoholic. I was living on Valiums, like I couldn't get through a day without that, you know what I mean? And I was a mess, and, you know, and the, so anyway, so he, and he's no kind of an addict, you know what I mean? And so the poor guy, he was just trying to fix me, and that's why I married him. That's the insanity. I married him to fix me, and then I was pissed off because he was trying to fix me, you know? So anyway, he couldn't win. So, okay, so then what? Oh, yeah, so I was always whining about being fat, and I wasn't fat, but I felt just, you know. So, so I went to the doctor, and anyway, so I went on one of the, my first diet was that one of those crazy pregnant women's urine shots diets, and you eat 500 calories, and it's very expensive, and you know, all that. And because if it wasn't expensive, then it probably didn't work, is how I thought, because if something was free and it worked, everybody'd be doing that. Is that ironic? Because this is free, and nobody wants to do it, and it works, you know what I mean? So anyway, but that's how they're all thinking out there, I'm sure, you know. So this is my thinking. So anyway, so I went on this diet and I got very sick. I lost, like, I don't remember how much weight I lost, maybe 20 or 25 pounds, and you know, I still wasn't okay, but you know, so, and I got real sick, and because I was hardly eating anything, but and then, of course, I stayed that weight for, like, maybe a day. And that's not an exaggeration, you know, because then I started binging immediately, you know. So this whole and complete and utter insanity that we're going to go on these diets and then start eating how we ate before, and we were going to stay at the weight that we were with, you know, when we quit this diet. So that's just what I did, though, and then I started that cycle that I'm sure you've all heard of, you know, that putting it all back on plus 20 pounds, you know, plus 30, plus whatever. So I worked my way back up, you know. And anyway, so it just continued like that, trying these crazy diets and then losing the weight and then gaining it all. And I was a lifetime member of Weight Watchers, you know, and all that stuff. And then I got pregnant when I was about 24, and I gained 65 pounds, and my daughter was a month premature, and she weighed 6 pounds, 10 ounces of that. But it was great because, I mean, I ate with complete and utter abandon. Before, when I ate, you know, I felt guilty about, you know, but I thought, nobody can give me a bad time now because I'm pregnant. And so, and people would say, well, you know, it's not when you get, the more weight you gain, the harder childbirth is. My childbirth, I was in labor for 45 minutes. And so that is a big lie. At least it was for me. But anyway, but I lost all my weight after my daughter was born. There's a picture of her when she's about 8 or 9 months in there. And I had lost all the weight. But how I lost the weight was I would eat like 2 eggs a day and go to the gym every day. So, you know, that was real healthy. But, but of course, then I gained it all back and, you know, more and more and more and more. And by the time, by the time I was about 32 maybe, I went to Overeaters Anonymous and, I got a sponsor, and I called my sponsor for about, 30 days. And, you know, supposedly I worked the first 3 steps, which I never did, and I never did my inventory. And I didn't eat sugar, though. The only thing and sporadically I'd go to meetings and all that. So the only thing I did was I did abstain. The miracle was from sugar for 2 years. And which was a miracle. And my weight stayed about the same for 2 years. And that's the only time in my whole adult life that I maintained a weight. I was always either up or down or up or down. So that was amazing. But then, of course, because I wasn't doing anything, I wasn't in the program, I wasn't working the steps, so all I had left was to eat again, you know, because that's the only way I know how to live without this program. So I started binging. I remember somebody gave me this beautiful box of chocolates at Christmas. So, you know, that just set me off, and there I was again. And in my 20s, I could go on a diet and lose the weight. And by the time I got into my 30s, I never could stay on a diet more than a week, you know. And then by the time I was in my 40s, forget it, I was scared to death. I was hopeless by this point, you know. I tried sporadically to come back to Overeaters Anonymous, but I'd go to a couple meetings and I couldn't do it, and I couldn't get abstinent, and I was scared to death to even think about going to a meeting, because the minute I decided I was going to, I mean, not going to a meeting, I was scared to death to think about going on a diet, because anytime I'd think that I was going to go on a diet, I'd start binging and I'd gain 10 pounds, you know? And I was scared to death because I thought, I can't go on a diet because I'm going to start binging and I'm just going to gain even more weight. You know, I'm just going to be at least 100 pounds overweight for the rest of my life. I'm just going to be fat for the rest of my life because I didn't know what else to do. So by this point, 1994, 8 years ago. So I was married to this man for 23 years who was, you know, like I said, trying to fix me. And 8 years ago, finally, poor guy, I left. And my daughter and I moved to Long Beach. And one of the first things I did was I found out where the Overeaters Anonymous meeting was, because I knew that was the only thing that was going to help me. Or therapy, I thought, or I'll go to therapy, which I've been in therapy many times in my life, and it never helped me with the weight. You know, it's fine for things, but for me, it never helped me with the weight. And so so I knew, of course, you know, my life at this point was I didn't have a job. I was going through a divorce. I was 100 pounds overweight and drinking every day. And so that was the picture of me in my life. And, you know, it was that what you've heard here over and over in these rooms, the drapes drawn on the sofa with the remote control and my alcohol and food. I didn't, you know, when people would come over, I remember just white-knuckling it because I couldn't wait for them to leave. Because, you know, I didn't have a job and I wasn't going to share my food or my alcohol with them, you know, because then there'd be less for me and I didn't have that much money to spend. So, and I do. All I wanted was that drink or that or the food, and I just wanted them to leave, and I couldn't wait till they left so I could go do that. And so, so that was it. That was my life. So I found out, but the irony is, you know, here I'm thinking I'm going to go to therapy and spend $100 a week when I didn't even have a job. You know what I mean? It's all such crazy thinking, the way I think anyway when I'm using, you know. So I found out where the Overeaters Anonymous meetings were, and it took me about a year to go, you know. And it's a Friday night meeting over there in Long Beach. I finally went, and it took me about another year to get abstinent, to ask somebody to sponsor me. And so I walked, you know, I finally did. I saw the one person in the room who was actually losing weight. Because the reason I walked in these doors was because I didn't want to be overweight anymore. I didn't want to be fat anymore. And so so this woman was losing weight. So I asked her to be my sponsor. And I had no idea. It was just completely God. You know, it is completely God. I have no idea why I walked in that room and I had the willingness that night to do what I was told to do and ask somebody to help me. I have no idea. I know that this is epidemic, you know, in this country especially, and why I, you know, I still wonder, why did I get here? Why did I get to be abstinent? And you know what? I don't know. I know that, you know, it has nothing to do with me. It really doesn't. This is just a gift. I don't know why I'm abstinent and why somebody else isn't. I'm just so grateful that I am today. And, you know, I used to think, well, if the closer to death you are, the easier it would be to be abstinent. But you know what? It's not, because I've seen people come in these rooms and die that couldn't get this program and they couldn't get abstinent, you know? So I don't know, and why am I here with 5 years abstinent? I don't know. You know, it's just, I'm so grateful. A friend of mine is very sick, and she is having a real hard time staying abstinent. And, you know, I know if she could be abstinent today, she'd be abstinent, you know? So anyway, but so this woman, you know, asked me what I was going to do, you know, what my food plan was going to be. I had no idea. I just said, like I said, I can't believe that I was willing to do this, but I just said, what do you eat? And she told me what she ate, so I ate what she ate. And she told me to call her at the same time every day, tell her what I was going to eat, and write and read her what I had written. And I thought, or I think it was at 6:30 at night I was supposed to call her, and I remembered thinking, first of all, just calling somebody at the same time every day. There was no way I was going to do that. And then tell her what I'm going to eat and then eat what I told her I was going to eat. You know what I mean? All that stuff. And I thought, oh, you know, this isn't going to last. But, you know, it did. And I still call her 3 days a week, you know. So, like I said, it's just completely God. And that first year, you know, I have a hard time remembering very much about that first year and what I did exactly. You know, when people say, like, what did you do, you know, working the steps that for, you know, when you're new, and I can't remember, but because I was in such a fog, and all I know is that I took direction. you know, I just did what my sponsor told me to do. I wrote every day, you know, and read to her what I had written, and went to a lot of meetings, and I did a lot of service, and sponsored other people. And that's what I did. You know, that's just kind of what kept me going that first year. And then I remember my first inventory that first year. And what I do remember about that is writing and thinking, I will never be able to read this to anybody, you know. And I remember just thinking, you don't have to read it to anybody today. Just write it down. Because I did write about things that I thought I would go to my grave with, you know, that I would never tell another human being. And, you know, when it came time to read it, I just read it, you know. You know, I'm not saying it was easy, but I just did it, you know. And that's what I learned here, just to do it, to take the contrary action, because face it, if my ideas were working and anything I thought was working, I'd be out there. I sure as hell wouldn't be in Overeaters Anonymous, and I sure as hell wouldn't be doing all the things that I do, you know what I mean, today. So nothing was working, and I just was struck, you know, with the willingness to take direction and not fight about it, and because, you know, doing what I want to do, I'm sitting on the couch eating and drinking, and that's, you know, what my mind tells me I want to do, and so I'm just fat and drunk, you know, when I'm doing what I want to do. So I had to take the contrary action too, and, you know, just, and then I'm so grateful, you know. You know, we come here and we get a book that tells us how to live our lives. Exactly. The answers to everything is in that book. And so it's just amazing to me. You know, we're so lucky. And I remember when I first started reading the book thinking, this is like dead old stuff. You know what I mean? Bill's story. That what? War fever ran high in a small New England town. And I thought, what the hell is this? I did, you know, like, and I'm going to have to read this, you know. And anyway, and now I read it, and, you know, God just talks to me when I read it today, you know. But anyway, so I'll speed ahead. But, you know, the steps, I'm so grateful. You know, in step two, I got that step by seeing the miracle of this program work in other people's lives. And still today, I'll forget what's happened in my life. And when I see it in somebody else and the change, you know what I mean? It just is such a miracle for me. But, you know, six and seven are just like, I guess, you know, the root of my program, I guess, because... anyway, I go to let me just say real quick, I do all those things I did when I was newly abstinent. You know, I sponsor people and go to meetings and do service and all that kind of stuff. And then I go to two step studies, one in each program, monthly step study. And I would, you know, if somebody's struggling with anything like that, it really has helped me so much in the last year doing the step study. I love it. It's just, you know, now we're doing step four, and so, of course, I'm doing another fear inventory, and my sponsor told me also, like, pause during the day and remember the things that took courage that you've done, you know? So, I don't know, it's just, this program has changed my life, and, you know, it can work for anybody, you know? I'm just so grateful to God, because it totally and completely is God. And, you know, I had like some real, I went on vacation. I hope I don't start crying. But I went to, I am going to start crying, I think, to Cuba about a month ago. I was there for 2 weeks. And my parents, as I said, were born there. And it was just really... just a real spiritual experience there. And I was just so grateful that I got to make that trip, because before this program, I wouldn't have done it. I would have been too much in fear
And I never would have went, you know. It wouldn't have been the same. And if I did go, it wouldn't have been the same trip. And I got to go there and be of service, you know, to somebody. I've found some of my mother's family there. And, you know, they're very poor there and oppressed. And anyway, so you know, we can help them now. And my cousin and I went together, and she's in Overeaters Anonymous, too. She has about 7 months of abstinence. And I took my big book and the 12 and 12, and we had a meeting. And one night I ended the meeting. I said, well, I'll read the St. Francis prayer, which is my favorite prayer. And the line, you know, where there is despair, let me bring hope. Just, it was so amazing because I've read that prayer so many times, you know. And, you know, I felt like I lived that that line, you know, in that prayer. But, you know, it just really is. It's just the miracles that happen in this program. Should I stop and do questions? Okay. Anyway, it just, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know why I'm abstinent today. I'm just incredibly grateful that I am. You know, God just has changed my life, and it is God. It's totally God, like I said, because, you know, on my own, I'm fat and drunk and miserable, and, you know, I get to be of service to other people today, to my mother, you know, to my daughter, to, you know, I didn't get abstinent until my daughter was almost 21, and so, you know, my amends to her really is, you know, to keep my mouth shut, you know, because this poor kid, you know, I mean, I was controlling this poor kid's life, you know, her whole life, and today I don't have to do that. You know, I'm not saying I don't want to sometimes open my mouth on that phone, but, you know, I've learned in this program I don't have to do everything I want to do, you know. So, you know, I make my amends to my daughter, and so I get to be, you know, a better friend, a better daughter, and a better mother today. So I'm just really grateful and just really happy to be here and that I got to come and share. And happy birthday again to Zan, who I've known now for a few years and has just really helped me so much in my program. Thank you. So anyway, that's it. I guess I'll stop now, huh? And is that it? Or do I have questions? Does anybody have a question? Yeah.
Thank you so much for your share. Can you talk a little about how you work step-free with problems that rise?
With what?
With problems that are part of the real world.
Yeah. Oh, okay. How I work step-3 in my daily life? Okay. Should I read it? Made a decision. Turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand Him. Well, you know, that's a daily thing for me. You know, being a complete control freak. So, because, you know, I think I got pretty quickly that I was powerless over the, you know, that food and all that and the alcohol. It was the, you know, the rest of my life. So, I don't know. It's a daily, I mean, I pray every day. I say the Serenity Prayer. You know, and I ask God to just show me His will. Some days, you know, like Friday, I had kind of a bad week. And Friday, I just got up really early and just started praying the Serenity Prayer and asked God just to show me where I could be of service today, you know. And so just, that's just what I do. You know, I try to remember as often as I can, you know, where I can be of service, to ask God where I can be of service, and to ask for His will, you know, and not mine. So, you know, and if I become too entrenched in something, too, I know, you know, it's all about my will and not God's will, you know. So it's just daily. I just have to remind myself of all those things. You know, the first three steps, yeah, I think about every day in the morning before I get out of bed. And my characters 6 and 7, you know, those character defects
that's such a huge thing for me. I don't know. The 6 and 7. I know your question was about 3, but anyway, okay. I'm sorry. I hope that answered your question. And you had a question?
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing. I want to read spiritual before where you were.
No.
How did you come about?
Yeah. Okay, well, I grew up a Catholic, and, you know, I'm not one of those angry Catholics that hate the Catholic Church. I'm no longer a practicing Catholic, but I had a very good experience for the most part. I loved the nuns. You know, most people have horror stories about the nuns. I loved them. I wanted to be a nun because I liked the outfits mainly. But, you know, I did. But, anyway, so, but I didn't have, you know, I didn't trust God, you know, I didn't understand that I could go to God, that I could fill myself with God. You know, it was still about self-will. I didn't get that connection between going to church and, you know, God. And, I don't know. I got here, though, and it was, like I said, seeing step 2 work in other people's lives. You know, I saw God changing other people. And then it became easier, you know, to see how God was changing my life. And then it was just little by little practicing it, you know, asking God. You know, and it's such a relief to trust God. You know, I think, what was I hanging on to all that? For all those years, you know, it was so hard. And I think back now how it was when we're running the show and how much pressure that is. And I think, no wonder I had to eat and drink. You know what I mean? No wonder. I mean, being out there and running the show and being in control like we think we are is so much pressure. You know, I don't even know how to get through a morning. And, you know, here I was thinking I was going to run my life and my daughter's life and everybody else's life that came into contact with me, you know. So it's such a relief. I think I came here and I saw what a relief it was to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And so little by little, it became easier and easier to do. And this last trip, since I got back, I've had spiritual experiences that God just showed me that I don't have to worry. You know, He's taken care of it, and I don't have to worry about it. You know, and that's where I am today. And that's what I got from this program. And it was just by little practicing these steps and, you know, and asking God to show me His will, you know. So, anyway, that's it.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, you spoke just a little bit about your husband being older and so on. How has your recovery transformed the relationship between you and him? He's still alive.
Yeah, he is. The relationship with my husband, how recovery has changed that. Okay. Well, it has. Well, what helps really immensely is that he now lives in Colorado, so, you know. But, I made my amends to him when I did my first inventory and in my first year, and he was very, you know, gracious about it. And, you know, we don't see each other that often, and, but... you know, I, you know, we're nice to each other. And, so I think, you know, the making amends helped a great deal to clear a lot of the air, you know, between us. But as I said, my daughter's going to be 26. So, you know, and he lives in Colorado. So it's not like I have small children, you know, connecting us and we see each other a lot. But, you know, things are fine. Between us, I think, you know. I mean, I hope he's happy, and I'm sure he hopes I'm happy, you know. But that 9th step really helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. What do you do when you really have a bad day, everybody seems to be a jerk. I was cleaning it up. You seem to run into one jerk after another, and you just really want to eat or drink. What do you do?
Well, I know, first of all, when I have days like that, that the problem's with me. You know, today I know that. I don't like to admit it. You know what I'm saying? I want to blame them. But I know that the problem's with me. And if it's really bad, which I've done, you know, I call my sponsor and we talk about it. And then she has me write about it, you know. So I work the steps on it. And then I don't eat or drink, you know. Today, I have to say, you know, I don't get the urge to eat compulsively or eat candy or sugar. That obsession has been lifted completely for that kind of thing. And I don't know why. It's just God, but the obsession is lifted with that. I never get the urge to go out and buy like 2 dozen donuts or even one donut, because when I look at that stuff today, and this is a miracle for somebody like me, is that I don't have the urge to eat it. I know where I'd go if I ate it. And I just remember the obsession of trying to get enough. And it's never, ever been enough. And I know there are not enough donuts, cookies, candy, Snickers bars, any of that for me in the entire world. You know, so I know that today. But the obsession has been lifted. So, and I just worked the steps, you know, so... Sometimes, you know, and when I'm in the most pain is when usually I'm the most willing to work the steps. Because today I don't want to be in that pain. It's harder to sit in that pain today the longer I've been abstinent, you know. So, but pain is the great motivator for me. So, anyway, anybody else have a question? No? Okay. Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you. What is your name?
Oh, my name is Lynette.
Lynette.
All right. I'm relatively new back in a way. Matter of fact, I'm 38 days sugar free.
Please ask a special
Excuse me. Oh, time. Okay. Do you have to completely separate your programs, or do you see that you're eating and drinking as basically the same things? How do you balance that?
Well, I go to both meetings, but it is connected completely for me. But I have to go to both meetings. And so that's what I do. You know, I just split my meetings. Because I need them both. You know, I can't stay abstinent in AA. And, you know, they're all eating all kinds of crap. No, but anyway, but and I need Overeaters Anonymous, you know, because that was my first addiction from my earliest memory. So I am a compulsive overeater first and foremost, you know. I do, I have to say, though, the thing, I never think about eating cookies, but every once in a while I'll look at a glass of wine and think, it looks good, but, you know, I haven't. But anyway, so never mind. Okay, great. Thank you.